chapter 9. It comes from Mark chapter 9, verses 2 through 9. And after 6 days, Jesus took with him Peter and James and John and led them up a high mountain by themselves. And he was transfigured before them, and his clothes became radiant, intensely white, as no one on earth could bleach them. And there appeared to them Elijah with Moses, and they were talking with Jesus. And Peter said to Jesus, "Rabbi, it is good that we are here. Let us make 3 tents, one for you, and one for Moses, and one for Elijah." For he did not know what to say, for they were terrified. And a cloud overshadowed them, and a voice came out of the cloud, "This is my beloved Son. Listen to him." And suddenly, looking around, they no longer saw anyone with them, but Jesus only. And as they were coming down the mountain, he charged them to tell no one what they had seen until the Son of Man had risen from the dead. All right, I'm going to join you down here today. So do you ever repeat a word or phrase over and over until you, like, can't grasp its meaning anymore? I remember doing this once as a kid, specifically with the word March. And so I also did it again while I was writing this sermon. I wasn't really happy about that, but, like, March, 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 March. March, March, March. Once you've said it enough, it's like March isn't real. What is it? What's March? It's literally just sounds. And then if your brain is as relentless as mine, it turns into like an existential crisis about language and how it's a social construction. And eventually you calm yourself down, but you swear you'll never say the word March again. But then you end up like giving a sermon and talking about it. And some people probably relate, but others are like, "Is she okay? Do you ever do that?" That's what the Transfiguration story begins to feel like when you chew on it. I hope I didn't ruin a word for you, but this is like the best parallel to what path I went down while preparing to pick apart the Transfiguration of Jesus. So in the summer of 2019, I was working as a day camp leader at Okoboji, and one of our day themes centered around the Transfiguration story. So that meant every week, I had to prepare myself and my team to teach 3 to 12-year-olds about the Transfiguration of Jesus Christ. And the thing about teaching something to children that is literally beyond human comprehension is that it's hard. You have to make it palatable enough to yourself so that you can try to communicate its significance. So basically, I spent 9 weeks repeating rhetoric of the Transfiguration, acting like I understood it. Like, I got it, makes sense, good stuff. And then this week, and this sermon preparation rolled around, and I had to laugh at myself because I could not find a single hint of comprehensibility in this story from Mark's gospel that I knew so well. Kind of like repeating a word, I'm gonna do a little repeat of the gospel and see if it still makes sense to you. Because sometimes I think we take the gospel at its face simply because it's gospel, and don't just sit in awe and wonder, what on earth is this? So verse 2, Jesus took his closest friends with him on a hike up a mountain. So far, I'm following. I'm following slowly because it's a high mountain, but I can relate to this. So then, still in verse 2, Jesus was transfigured before them. So now I'm like, I didn't really get very far. I have a lot of questions. And then his clothes became so impossibly white, and suddenly Moses and the Elijah were there, as in Moses of "Let my people go," about 1500 BC, and Elijah from being physically taken up to heaven about 900 BC. That is, two super dead guys appear on the mountaintop along with this really inconceivable vision of Jesus. the same man that the disciples had been living life with. And the voice of God comes out from a cloud, repeating the same thing it said at Jesus' baptism. "This is my beloved son. Listen to him." Suddenly, the only thing left is Jesus. Does that make you feel a little crazy? Because I definitely know the disciples felt that way. They did not know how to manage the situation. They didn't understand it. They didn't know how to respond. Now we have a clear depiction of all the incredible symbolism and parallelism between this story and Old Testament narratives. It's really fascinating, but it doesn't necessarily break into how the Transfiguration story speaks to me today. I want to focus on the Transfiguration itself. And to do that, I will approach it as I did in summer 2019, and at the request of one Michael Scott. Why don't you explain this to me like I'm an 8-year-old? Transfiguration comes from the Greek word metamorpho, which is similar to words like transformation, change, metamorphosis. There's a newness, a revelation, a difference in how Jesus appeared on that mountaintop. Jesus, the Son of God, shone with the glory of his divinity, which was otherwise veiled. He was still Jesus, but he was Jesus in a new light. And like Michael Scott, I'm prompted to a new request. Why don't you explain this to me like I'm 5? So the Transfiguration is like a caterpillar that becomes a butterfly. It transforms into something we didn't see before, but it's also still the same. Like, the caterpillar is the butterfly, and the butterfly is the caterpillar. Its essence doesn't change, but it's really beautiful now. So I can kind of understand that. I get what's being communicated, but I still can't understand the fullness and the significance of this glorious moment that happened before Peter, John, and James. Jesus tells them not to mention it before he resurrects from the grave. Again, we read that and say, right, exactly, Jesus rises from the grave. But the disciples are so confused. Like, what are you talking about? Truly, this account could not be understood until after the resurrection, when the evidence could only result in one conclusion: Jesus is God. And this account reveals, in retrospect, that Jesus willingly went to the cross, voluntarily chose suffering, and accepted death not in spite of his divinity, but because of it. The thing is, Jesus doesn't go straight to the cross after this episode. Instead, Jesus rejoins the rest of the disciples and continues on his ministry of teaching and healing. Jesus doesn't allow James, John, and Peter to get distracted from the task at hand, which is displaying God's love before man. And this is why I find the Transfiguration story kind of funny and a great parallel to what faith is and what it should be like. We can approach it as many times as we like, but we will never be able to quite wrap our minds around this. We are simply incapable of figuring out God, and once we think we have it all figured out, we suddenly don't. God is too great for our minds to contain. And I think we should revel at the opportunity to not get it anymore. And I don't mean that in, like, I give up, I don't get it. But in a way where you release and you trust. Like, I am so human that I can't possibly conceive the extent of God and God's character. The thing about faith is that you're not meant to arrive anywhere. You don't reach a threshold of knowledge about God and suddenly everything makes sense. Faith is, as cheesy as it sounds, a journey in which we experience great heights and great depths. This Transfiguration story is a story of an incredible spiritual mountaintop, an inexplicable experience of God's presence and glory. But at other times in our journey, we question ourselves and our encounters with God. We experience trials and doubt. We become absorbed by the mundane. Believe it or not, these are all good places to be. Every circumstance is an opportunity to marvel at how much we can't understand. It is an opportunity to trust, to release control, not just of our circumstances, but of whatever we've made out God to be in our minds. When we trust, we begin to strip away the distractions of things we can't comprehend, until, like the disciples on the mountaintop witnessed, there is only Jesus left. Because in the grand scheme of things, our faith is just Jesus. And it doesn't require us to understand, only to know that only Jesus is left. And in Jesus, we know love. We know no conditions, no misguided certainty, no aggressive gatekeeping. We know only love, inclusion, and the joy of mystery. We are redeemed by a love beyond our wildest dreams, and because of this, we too are transfigured. God's presence can be seen through us in a way that transforms. Light can shine out of the darkness, and we can live out an unconditional and incontrovertible love as we fix our eyes on the crux of the transfiguration, of the Christian faith, and of life itself, Jesus. And so today, I encourage you to know Christ wherever you are at, and to embrace with gratitude the great mystery that is our God. Amen.